All right, here we have about, I don't know, 850 foot par four, out of bounds road on the right. We're going downhill on the first tee shot. You have two options. You can throw a hyzer out over the road, or you can throw down the middle, down the hill. There's also OB on the left. But then on your second shot, you climb up a big hill, lots of elevation gain, probably throwing 300 to 350 up this hill into the green.
Hole 17 at D-Glow.
That is correct.
Woo!
Oh, my gosh.
I got 2 points.
Wow. I was completely lost.
I was very lost for a period of time as well.
I was stuck on that stupid world's hole. Oh, what hole was that? Hole 10 or something at that golf course?
I literally don't remember any holes at whatever
hole
that course
10,
is called.
Hole 10. Yeah, I don't remember what hole 10 is.
I got stuck on hole
It's
one
the hole where you
club.
Throw downhill, and then the green is this crazy sloped uphill shot over the valley a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Kind of a similar hole if you think about it, but there's no
oh,
road
that
on
hole
the right.
Where you throw a shot and it just always rolls OB.
Correct. Yeah. Unless you're Gannon Burr.
Right.
You just got to play the role.
Well, welcome everybody to the Crushed Pepper podcast. And for a little bit, it's Crushed Pepper on pizza. We have a special guest, Calvin Heimberg. And yeah, this is the first time where we're having any sort of special guest. So congratulations, Calvin. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me. I didn't know this was such a special moment for all you guys, but I'm glad I'm here for it.
It's a special moment for you.
And you.
For everyone involved.
Absolutely.
For everyone involved.
We're stoked. I mean, Joey is over in Florida at Calvin's house right now. And obviously, we had to have the man himself jump on the podcast. And this means the season is just around the corner. Calvin, are you ready?
I think I'm ready. I took a good bit off, you know, at the beginning of the off season, didn't really play through December, and started playing again in January, and I'm feeling pretty good. Been doing some rehab on my elbow, and I'm starting to be able to throw some forehands again without pain, so that's a good
nice.
that's some good progress for me, because last year that was a big issue for me.
Wow. And do you consume any off-season disc golf content, or do you just kind of do your own thing?
I can't say I really consume much disc golf content in general. So I'm definitely out of the loop. You know, I kept tabs, you know, at the beginning of the year on, you know, where people were going sponsorship wise, but other than that, I haven't been watching all your videos, Simon. I'm sorry.
I wasn't really talking about my videos, even though I'm offended that you're not watching. I meant more like the early tournaments, like the whole New Zealand tour and the two big tournaments in Arizona this year. You know, Ricky played his first Discraft bag this weekend. I just wonder if you like keep up with that at all, if it interests you, and if not, why not? Don't you live and breathe disc golf?
I mean, I would say I live and breathe disc golf for 8 months of the year, and this just isn't part of that 8 months, but
fair enough.
I think I watched a little bit of New Zealand coverage. I think I tuned in and saw Aaron Gossage had like an 8-stroke lead going in the final round, and it wasn't very interesting seeing someone have that big of a lead. So I don't think I even made it to the end of the front nine. But
so when you, if you tune into disc golf and you get so bored because Aaron Gossage is just smoking everyone, what do you switch to?
Show? I think if I'm on YouTube, it's just wherever the rabbit hole takes you, you know? Yeah. Could be conspiracy theories. Could be.
Do you like flat earth theory?
I'm not a flat earther. But, you know, I'll watch videos on it. I'll try to understand, you know, where they're coming from.
I know. It fascinates me too. But
do you have any pyramid theories?
I don't know how the pyramids are made, you know? I don't know. I would love to see them one day and get an idea of really how big they are, because I know, you know, without seeing it in person, I feel like it's tough to really quantify how big these things are. But there are a lot of wild theories on the pyramids. Maybe the aliens did it.
There's something, that's for sure.
We are aliens. That's my theory.
I think there's aliens amongst us.
Are you
Joey
an alien?
Tamale, welcome to the show.
There's at least one alien out of the four of us.
It's me.
It's me. You?
It is.
Which one of you guys drove 1,000 miles yesterday? Oh, wait. That was me.
It was you.
I thought you were about to say none of us because you flew your spaceship, your flying saucer.
Ooh. Yeah, I have no... I watched your Instagram stories, but I feel like that could have been a ploy. It's a cover up.
Yeah.
You just zipped from the planet Minnesota all the way down to Tampa, Florida.
No, I got chased basically. I left on Friday afternoon from Minneapolis, drove to Wisconsin and through the snow. And that sucked. And then I woke up the next morning in Wisconsin and there was more snow. And I drove through the snow most of the day. And then I was going to make it to Nashville and saw that there were multiple tornado warnings for Nashville and even as far north as Louisville, Kentucky. And so I actually stopped short on my drive on Saturday, stayed in Indiana, and woke up to 5.5 inches of fresh snow on top of my car. And then drove the next 5 hours through snow and then rain and then flood aftermath and eventually got into the first hour of non-precipitation driving. And it was about, I don't know, 2.5 days into my trip, I saw the sunshine for the first time. But yeah, powered through and made it down here last night at 11:45 at night. No, 11 p.m. probably. So, yeah, the slog. The off season is officially over for me, and this is.
It's not officially over, Joey. You're not competing under PDGA sanction quite yet.
I agree. But it just feels like for my body, like the migration season has started, and I'm very grateful that I have a buddy down here who lets me come and hang out, and I have a good relationship with him and his parents and his family, and I don't take that for granted. This is like my fourth time coming down here, and it's super special for me to come down and be in the sun, and I'm excited to see you guys down here soon.
We're excited to be down there. Can't wait. It's just been cold and snowy here in Colorado, so I keep looking at the Tampa forecast, and I'll have a little extra time, and I can't wait to sink my toes into the sand. It's going to be great.
Well, let's. If you guys have any other questions for this boy, let's ask him, and then get him on his morning, because he's got some PT to go to.
Kelvin, are you rocking the shaggy look, or are you going to clean up before tour?
It's actually a good question. I've been debating that actually in the past couple of days. It was kind of warm the other day, and generally I just cut all my hair off once when I get hot and start sweating, my hair gets in my face and it gets annoying. And it did happen like 2 days ago. I was sweating, I threw a shot, and like a little lock of hair hit me in the eyeball, and it didn't feel very good. So I think I might be cutting it off soon.
Are you a sports clips guy?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much whatever's, you know, around. I get like a haircut once or twice a year, so I can't be too picky on what I'm choosing. So, yeah, there's a sports clips around. You know, you want to go together?
Well, I have really short hair right now, so I have no need to go yet. But definitely this year, I want to go get a haircut with you if it ever happens. Do you have any stats on if Shaggy Calvin or Cleaned Up Calvin is a better disc golfer? Completely random question.
That's a good question. I don't have any stats, but I should go back and just look at the tournaments I've won and what my hair length is on average for winning on tour. And
I think people get more intimidated by Afro Calvin.
So you're saying I should leave it?
Yeah.
I think you should leave it and then just kind of test how it goes. Okay. Look in people's, like, look deep into their eyes and just see if they're a bit scared or not, and then you can go from there.
You could just do like a little trim. Okay. Like, just set it up to where it's like you're always in peak Calvin form.
Yeah. Or maybe I just
like
go
a little
get
trim
like,
each week.
Maybe I just go get like a perm, you know? That'll get it out of my face. Just super curly.
I'd love to see it personally.
You could literally pull it off.
All right, so I have some inside questions for Calvin. I want him to do a little bragging or informing to us about the rock equipment that he purchased this off season, because I got a little sneak peek this morning in the garage, and you know what? We're going into every rabbit hole slightly. We talk about darts on a deep level. We talked about toe socks. Calvin, tell us about the rock hounding rabbit hole.
Okay. Well, you guys may or may not know, I like to rock hound while I'm out on tour. I basically just go out and look for rocks that I think look cool. And this past off season, I bought a couple bigger pieces of equipment. I got a 16-inch wet saw, which runs with a mineral oil coolant. So it's like a big, completely enclosed system. And then I also got a calving machine, which is essentially, basically I got like an arbor with six different, you know, grit wheels on it. So everything from 80 grit to 3000 grit to polish these stones. These wheels are probably like 8 inches in diameter and maybe 2 inches wide. So I don't know. I can't really describe it better than that. Maybe I'll have to post some pictures somewhere can see them.
That's the plan.
But those are my two. Actually, I also got a wet belt sander as well. I got three things. But yeah, all just different polishing things, just so I can, do something with these rocks that I pick up off the ground.
Do you trade them or sell them or just collect them or display them, or just, is it just fun doing it rather than actually having the finished product at the end?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely enjoy doing it. It's like, it's kind of relaxing, you know? It's not like super intensive, like on the brain, you know? You can kind of just relax and sit back and just kind of do something monotonous and zone out a little. But I tend to keep the ones I really like, give some away. I definitely have done no trading or selling or anything, but pretty much I just keep the ones I really like. I can put them on my shelf and then give away other ones that still look cool but may not be my favorites.
Damn, that's
cool.
I want
to
go.
You get to go to like some pretty cool places too. Like, I imagine anytime you're finding cool rocks, you're in a really beautiful place as well, generally speaking.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely been to a lot of really, really cool places, some more remote than others. But I kind of look at it as, I get to go explore some of the outdoors and do some kind of applied walking. You know, it's not just walking or hiking. I get to kind of do that while
it's a big treasure hunt.
Yeah, it's a treasure hunt, you know, variable reward.
I don't know too much about rocks, I've got to admit. Like, are rocks like fully understood by humans? Like, do we know how they form, what they are, and how they got there? Or is it kind of, is there some mysterious aspect to it?
Are there rock conspiracy theories?
You know, I can't think of any rock conspiracy theories, but I think for a lot of things, a lot of different, you know, rocks and minerals, they have pretty good ideas of, you know, how they form and the conditions needed to. There are some things where there's, you know, different theories, you know, different people have different ideas, but I think they have a pretty good idea of how a lot of these things are formed. Like, you know, we can
isn't make, there three different three main types of rocks: metamorphic, sedimentary, and igneous. Is that right?
Yeah.
Eagle, you just knew those three words out of the top of your head.
Well, I actually did a stone sculpting class when I was a kid, so I remember it from that.
Shout that out.
Pretty impressive.
Shout out Pat McMahon, stonemason.
No, it was actually shout out Barbara Cox, this eccentric German, actually our landlord at the time was this stone sculpting artist, and she offered up a class to me, and that's how it happened.
I'm definitely intrigued by stone hounding and this along the same lines, like metal detecting or something, like with one of these beep beep machines walking around beaches or through the woods or something. I can totally see myself really enjoying that. What? Have you ever done metal detecting, Calvin?
I haven't. I had like a cheap one as a kid, so I don't know if that really counts. Definitely not like what you're seeing on YouTube, but I've seen those YouTube videos where they're out there metal detecting on the beach, or, you know, people have found like these, you know, I feel like sometimes people are around like old, you know, settlements or places where there was, you know, wars, and they're pulling up like old slugs and stuff. But yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff you can find. That'd be something I think I'd be pretty into too, but I haven't.
Have you seen magnet fishing?
Oh yeah, I've gone down that rabbit hole too.
I went a deep dive into that last year at some point. They pull out some really cool stuff out of random water holes and lakes and rivers.
Yeah, guns.
Yeah.
You know, missiles.
I've literally been watching so many videos that like parallel all the stuff that you're talking about. Have you guys heard of this one channel called The Outdoor Boys?
I don't think I have.
It's this family guy who was originally this traffic attorney in Virginia, but he was originally from Alaska, and he films everything on a GoPro. He has like 13 million subscribers now, and it's like the most wholesome stuff you ever watch, and he does these different survival challenges. He'll get flown to like these very remote places in Alaska and like stay out there for a few days at a time. And I was watching it the other day, just like scavenging whale bones up in Alaska, looking for like walrus ivory, seeing all these things that float to shore, like from Japan, like these fishing bobs. And it just kind of reminds me of what you guys are talking about. Super cool YouTube channel. I've been totally addicted to it.
I have to check it out.
It's really good. Like I don't normally watch that kind of stuff, but for some reason it's like so captivating to me. Unsolicited advice. Outdoor Boys.
Calvin, do you have any questions?
I guess just to parrot back one of your questions, are you guys ready for the season?
Simon was actually born ready.
Be in my contract that I have to answer a question if I'm ready with born ready.
Okay.
That's a joke. It was not, but it was informally in my contract. I'm ready. I'm really excited. I haven't been getting to play much, also because of weather. Literally today, I can't even get out of my freaking house because our driveway is just a sheet of ice. And all salt and all melting materials are sold out in every hardware store because we've just been blasted by one freaking ice, snow, water storm in a row. And there's nothing we can do. And our driveway is pretty long and significantly uphill too. So we're stuck. It's amazing. And I haven't been playing, but I started putting in my basement last week. So that's the daily routine now, which is really nice. And I don't know if we should go into that segment now, but I came up with a little putt theory. But no, overall, I'm ready. Eagle, I can get into that later with the putt putts theory.
I was born ready.
Dang.
No.
Eagle needs
you guys are amazing.
Eagle, you need another big one coming soon.
I feel it. My metric this offseason was at least playing or touching a disc 5 times a week, and I have adhered to that since mid-December. So my putt's feeling good, my throw's feeling pretty good, And I'm excited to get to warm weather to start refining even further. But I've put in a pretty good amount of work this off season, and I would say come Thursday when I fly down to Florida, I'll be ready.
Dang. Well, that's good to hear.
I'm flying out Tuesday on the 25th, and it seems like that's 3 days before the tournament starts. That's like 2 days before I would usually fly to a tournament, and I feel like I'm going to be the last one there, even though I feel like I'm going so early. But everyone's going like a week or two early for this tournament. I don't know. It blows my mind.
Well,
everyone's like so ready.
I'm flying in Thursday, and I don't get to Brooksville area till Monday. I have a place in Tampa that I'm going to be staying at just to get out of cold weather in Colorado and
come over and knock on the door, boy.
The ocean.
Come over and knock on the door.
I will come over and knock on the door.
How nice is it, Calvin, that the first Pro Tour stop is like an hour from your house, or 45 minutes, or what is it?
Yeah, it's a little over an hour and 10, but it's really nice. It's a nice change from, you know, flying out to Vegas, or, you know, when I started touring, I actually drove all the way out to Vegas, which was some of the worst decisions I've ever made in my life. But I would say it's really nice. You know, it's not a course I necessarily go up and play a ton, you know, being an hour and 10 minutes from where I live. But, you know, it's cool that it's basically, it's almost in my backyard. So
do you make the drive each day, or do you get a place up there?
I make the drive each day. I figure, you know, this is basically the last time I'm, you know, around Florida for a good bit. So might as well make use of staying at home.
Do you have your van at home, or do you have another car that you drive around when you're home?
I only got the van. The van's the daily driver at home, you know.
Wow.
Big guy, it's not too bad to drive. My van's like the short wheelbase Mercedes, and it kind of just drives like a truck. So, you know, not too bad. Not like you, whatever sporty vehicle you're driving these days. What is
it? I'm an Audi guy, sorry.
Yeah.
The only problem for Calvin now about having this event here is that now his house slowly fills up with disc golf squatters like me.
Oh, yeah.
Squatties.
The peace and privacy is over.
Yeah, it's over, but, you know, luckily I had a few months of peace and quiet, so I can't complain too much.
Well, Peppies, that was your first guest experience. Calvin, thank you so much for last second agreeing to do this, and we'll definitely have you back on in the future when we have a mic that you can hold and not pass between me and you.
That sounds good. If the ratings tank because I'm on, feel free never to invite me again too. Like, I won't feel bad.
we'll let you know. We'll let you know.
All right. Well,
bye. Love you.
Bye, Calvin. Well, that was Crush Pepper on Pizza. That was awesome. Comment down below.
Big little segment there.
Comment below if you enjoyed that. We're just going to organically have guests on when we see fit. It'll be a surprise. It'll be whoever we feel like, and it's going to be great. And I think that went great. How we doing, boys? How we doing? We're just about ready to start our disc golf lives once again, and I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, we have one more podcast next week before we're actually going to be podcasting in person.
Me and Joey will probably podcast in person the next episode.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be the lonely guy in cold Massachusetts still.
Joey and I can share a mic.
No, I don't want it. That was not fun.
Okay.
But yeah, we did it.
We did it. Who wants to start?
I can talk about my putt theory since we had the perfect transition already.
Lovely. I want to hear Simon's putt theory.
Okay, so what I did the last 2 years in the off season was I joined this kind of like an indoor tennis slash sports facility where I had this relatively large indoor baseball field often to myself. And I used that for some training, some throwing, and some putting, probably mainly putting. At least that was my idea. And what I found myself doing is not being very disciplined with what I was actually trying to do, which was practice the important putts, which are 25 to 40 footers. Those are the money makers. And now I am no longer a member at this club, and I just set up a little putting station in my basement downstairs. And like the max distance putt I can possibly even attempt is like just over 30 feet. And I was first like really annoyed. I thought that wasn't big enough. I thought it wasn't good enough. I thought I need more room. But what I've noticed last week was that this forces me to putt the freaking putts that I'm supposed to practice because I have no option to go to 120 feet and try to throw it in for a little Instagram video. So actually, I use my time way better. I practice 25 to 30 footers, which are the putts you're supposed to make and supposed to practice. And I feel like the putting practice has been way more valuable and just way more, there was much more point to it than what I did when I had way more room to do whatever I wanted to do. So yeah, my putt theory is that if you're a bit, if you don't have all the space you would dream of, it might be actually a helpful thing. So I'm fully embracing my 30 footers and hopefully it translates to a better putting performance in the early season, I hope.
I've actually made a video about this, and there's a video from way back in the day as well that told people to putt exclusively from short range, say 10 to 15 feet even. Because most players, especially aspiring amateurs, they usually practice missing putts rather than practice making putts. So in essence, the video that was originally made put these players on this month or maybe 2 month program where they just knocked out 10, 15 foot putts, probably like 100, 200 of them a day. And by the end of that time, they built so much confidence rather than just putting from even 30, 40 feet, missing putts. They were able to build confidence making putts rather than miss them. And that's something that I've always thought that's crucial as well. Personally, I don't really practice putt that much outside of 30 feet ever. I recently, in the last 2 years, started jump putting, so I've practiced that a little bit, but I always like to warm up practicing very close range just to get the release and also tell my brain that the disc is supposed to go in the basket, and if you can find that release, shake hands with the pole, put it right in the heart of the chains, that's going to be the best for your overall confidence.
It's funny because my basement is sort of the same. I'm probably a little bit further, Simon. I have 37 and a half feet is the furthest I can go back in my basement. But it is funny to think about the conundrum that you were in as a trick shot. Like, you have those expectations of a trick shot person. Like, my brain would never, if I had all that space and I was practicing putting, like, I'm so not wired to think about like making a throw in for an Instagram video, because in my brain that category would take me like hours, and for you it's like you could do it in 25 minutes. But it's just interesting to see that, like, actually having a smaller space, I mean, that almost feels like a metaphor for your whole career. Like, the moment you couldn't throw the Simon lines, you started winning.
It's true. And not only the throw-ins for Instagram were an issue, but I would also like start practicing 50-footers, 60-footers, 65-footers, because, I mean, we can be honest here. Like, at some point, 25 footers are freaking boring. Mm-hmm. And if you have 10 putters and you're doing it for more than 20 minutes, like you start like losing focus and you start being bored and kind of messing around and putts start being sloppy. So maybe not even helpful.
I agree.
But if you only have that much room and there's only that much you can do, it really felt surprisingly helpful in a way that I wasn't even tempted to mess around with other stuff. And it just keeps my practice sessions much more focused and shorter. So I can do like 15 to 20 minutes. I don't know how many putts that is. Maybe like 100, 150 putts maybe. And that's it. 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the night, at night. Perfect.
How does it feel?
It feels really good. And I want to say one more thing about putting, which is a new theory that I invented in my head. I don't know if it's actually new, but people who are struggling with their putt, what I've done over the years, what I've noticed is something that I'm calling micro changes.
Okay.
So if you're not happy with your release or with your angle or with how your putt's flying to the basket or whatever it is with the feel of it, then I would recommend trying something that I call micro change. Like just to the smallest possible extent where it feels like in your head you're making a slight adjustment, if it's to your grip or to your stance or to your release angle or to the speed, whatever. All those things could be a micro change. Like a change you would physically not even see if you made a video of it. But just in your head, you're slightly as small as possible trying to tweak it. And see how that feels. If it's not good, try something else. If it feels suddenly better, just try sticking with that and just try it for a couple minutes. And I've really felt that tiny, tiny micro changes in my putt form that you can't even see on camera start suddenly helping with my confidence. Because I think we can all agree that, I mean, at some level, putting is all in your head.
If you're 100% confident with no fear, outside of a grip issue, you're going to make every putt.
Oh, every putt to an extent.
Yeah, right.
There's nuance to it.
Sure, but I think it's like...
trust in the release.
It's giving, yeah, exactly. Trust in the release. And I mean, I think too, not even just like micro adjustments on the physical level. For me too, it's like micro adjustments in how I think about the putt going in. So sometimes it's like pick a chain. Sometimes it's like, you know, think about, it's like what are your mental cues too? That can be a micro adjustment to just like the way that your brain, essentially the routine that it goes through before you putt. And even for me with my neurofeedback that I was doing, as I trained, I sort of subconsciously was cycling through all these different micro adjustments in how to more effectively do this simulator. So like every time I would consistently suck, my brain would make like, okay, how can we look at this different? How can we look at this concept differently so that it seems new and fresh and then allows us to focus again? And I think it's the same idea with putting. And even like, I don't know, somebody like Yuli who changes his form all the time and like not in a, I would say never in like a dramatic way, but I would say Yuli's somebody who's always making those little micro adjustments to until you get to a spot where like, you know, he's made 5 or 6 of them over the course of a few years. And it may be now you can actually see the difference in his form from like a year ago because he's like made a few in a row.
And now he's one of the best, according to statistics.
One of my anecdotes is, I don't like saying confidence because I feel like when I play my best, I have a trust in my release to where I'm not necessarily confident. A lot of the time, I feel like my putt is never going to go in. But just based off of muscle memory and knowing that I put in good practice, I know that I have the mechanics to where I can just step up to my putt and make it, just even if I have doubt in my head.
So this,
and that's what I think, that is what a lot of top players have, is that their mechanics are so good, their muscle memory, that even when they don't feel like they're going to make a putt, it goes in anyway because they've put in so much practice.
So this Simon, I don't know if you had anything else to add on this, but this segues.
I have one question.
Okay.
One more question. This question has popped to my mind. What is, in your mind, what is the best possible putt on hole one of a tournament to have? And a given factor is that you're going to make it. But what is, for your mental game, what's the best possible putt you're going to make on hole one to get your round started?
I'm probably right at 30 feet, maybe like 3 feet inside the circle.
Dude, I was going to say that.
For birdie.
I have a hole.
So just inside the circle for birdie is the best possible start to your round in your... Why?
Just because anything closer feels like it's a given, but it's a tester. It's a tester mm-hmm. putt that in the back of your mind saying, oh, I'm going to miss this, especially if there's a little bit of a death putt aspect to it. And you're not... I mean, hole one, you're not necessarily warmed up yet. So... if you can stick it in the heart of the chains from 30 feet and people are watching, you get a little clap. It's like, ooh, this is going to be a good round.
I have a very specific moment from my best tournament of the year last year. Cause when Simon said, what was the best part to start the round? My brain instantly went to this exact moment last year, which was, I guess it was third round at Worlds at New London on hole one, and I had graduated out of the B pool after the first two rounds. So now I was up with you guys in the big boy group, and there were people actually for the first time. Because essentially, for those who don't know, if you're in
there B, were people.
If you're no like a crowd, like if you're in B pool,
oh,
at,
okay.
If you're for people who don't know, if you're in B pool at Worlds and you play the first 2 days with no spectators, basically like nothing, and so it's a little like a bit of a shock to have people. And there was like 50 people sitting in those bleachers down by hole one, and I was on a card with like good pros, Parker Welk and a couple other guys, and I remember putting it like. For birdie, like just outside the circle left on hole one at New London. So like I was right basically by those bleachers, and it's a death putt basically down that slope past that basket. And yeah, I mean, it was the best putt of my whole weekend, just absolutely canned it. And I mean, it was without a doubt the best tournament of my whole season. But I think that was a huge moment for me because I was so nervous because here I was like, now you're in A pool, now you got to perform, and here's your birdie putt. And yeah, that moment could have definitely sent the rest of my tournament in a different direction if I had airballed that.
And there's no doubt in your mind that making that putt for par is more helpful than for birdie on hole one? That's the only thing, because yeah, I agree that any further just feels too much like a fluke on hole one, so it doesn't really help your confidence that much, and anything shorter just feels like a must make. So I think it's right. I think exactly like circle's edge, just inside, is the sweet spot to get your tournament started. But I can't decide if for birdie or for par is actually more helpful in your brain. Probably birdie's nicer, just in general, it eases the mind a bit.
I think for par, par stresses me out too much.
It's a relief to have it for.
It makes me think,
yeah,
oh gosh, is it going to be one of those kind of rounds where it's like everything's a
is that
wild.
What it is though, Simon? Would you rather be relieved or would you rather be like stoking the fire, basically? You know, would you rather be a little
well,
stoked?
Well, there's a whole other discussion with if you start a round going like birdie, 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 then that also adds a new level of stress. Because suddenly you're like thinking about, oh my God, I'm the best player ever. When am I going to blow up? Or, oh my God, I'm already leading. And oh my God, what am I going to do when I win?
Yeah.
Like, there's levels to how good you want to start as well, I think.
I like starting par birdie.
I think it depends on your mental fortitude, though. I bet you there are pros out there who can start with 5 birdies in a row and be totally unfazed.
Yeah, I mean, the younger you are, the easier it is, I think. I think Gannon, he gets stressed if he doesn't start with 5 birdies in a row. More than he would if he starts with 5 birdies in a row.
I don't think he gets very stressed, honestly. I don't think Hennenberg gets stressed on the course, and I think that's why he's so good, because he's never stressed. He's confident in his ability to birdie the next hole every time, regardless of what just happened. I bet
maybe
he's
just, so.
I bet he's so. This segues.
This is the Gannon Burr fan club episode.
He just texted me actually, telling me that he's in Tampa. So everybody's down here. This segues
just
into
not the boys.
A really interesting thing that I saw on Instagram, and I wonder if you guys saw it by Silas Schultz. Did you guys watch? Did you guys see that post that he made about trying to hit that gap and hitting like all the trees on either side of the gap, and then how he, oh, it's just a, it's a fantastic little clip. Basically, he was playing, I don't know what tournament just happened up there, maybe Open at Tallahassee, but some other tournament up there, and it was a classic hole that he was filming in practice, just couldn't hit the gap with his backhand, and he made like a whole reel basically joking about how he couldn't. And then he did hit it in practice and showed the video, and then sort of had an epiphany in round two of the tournament, because he was stepping up to that tee pad and felt like he really wanted to go for that line that he had missed and practiced a bunch and then executed once on video. His play had been the forehand and for tournament, but he decided to switch it, and he said that he did this new thing that he's calling it like a disc golf life hack. And essentially, he was bob on the box, and while everybody else threw their drives, all he did was look at his phone and watch the video of himself, like, essentially puring the gap. He said he watched it like four times in a row. Didn't watch any of his card mates throw. Just watched himself pure the gap four times in a row. And then he said he stepped up and just like absolutely laced it and parked it. And I thought that was, he said it's like, he thinks it's his new life hack for playing. And I thought it was really interesting that you just like, instead of watching your card mates throw, you just, right before you throw the shot, you just pull up a clip of yourself puring it and you just watch it and then you throw.
I have two notes to that.
I probably have two notes to that as well.
First of all, it's in the rules that you have to watch your cards mates. So I don't think that's sportsmanlike behavior and against the rules. So I wouldn't do that. And second of all, I think being on your phone during the round is very rude. And I also would not do that.
Use the phone of your mind. That's what visualization is for.
That's true. I just thought most people suck at visualizing. So it was an interesting, I think it's an interesting strategy to practice outside of sanctioned tournaments. Just like
do it
in a practice round. Go to your problem hole on your final practice round for the Pro Tour, the hole that you have not been able to do all week, and go there until you do it right, and then just watch yourself do it right. I think that could be really nice to do the night before. Like, let's say, I don't know, let's say hole four at USDGC is just giving you the jips. So on Wednesday, you go out and you throw until you pipe it once. You just save that video, and that night, you just watch that video of you just lacing hole four. And that's like the lasting image that burns into your head before you go to bed. And so then when you step up on hole four the next day, you have that image. So I agree, Simon, not doing it during your round is probably stupid, but
I think that's great for the people it works for.
Mm-hmm.
I would be honestly willing to give that a try.
I thought the concept was really neat.
If there's a good hole at Olympus in 2 weeks.
Yeah, just take
and
your
during our practice
hole.
Round, we can test this theory if it works for us.
I want to do it.
Are we filming a practice round in Florida? Is that scheduled?
What time do you get in?
I fly in on Tuesday evening. And then we have Wednesday and Thursday to film.
Yes, Wednesday. We're doing it then. Wednesday morning, please.
Is Germ playing?
As a guest? That's up to us right now. Do we decide live?
I would love to try to get Germ on.
As the first,
obviously he's very busy with Jomez and such, but we can ask.
Do we do a guest-less first tournament, or do we have him on the first one of the year?
That's my vote.
I would say that's my vote as well, but
I think
we can also do a Simon Eagle only.
Well,
keep it quick, keep it simple.
I'll call him today and see, because he I already was supposed to talk to him about doing his in the bag, and so he has some plans for that that isn't during the tournament week, so that's a positive for us. So he might not be as busy as we think, especially on Wednesday. If he's with Jomez, they'll have filmed their practice round already, so it's just whether or not he wants to do two in 1 week. But should we do the news quickly?
I was just about to say that.
Okay, well, first things first, let's talk about the biggest news. MVP has a new highest rated player. Mauri Vilmaan, Estonian national champion. One of my...
Multiple Euro Tour champion.
Mm-hmm. And...
sneaky signing by MVP. Let me say that.
Yes.
Freaking Andrew didn't tell me a word of this one. And he's like, oh yeah, one little small thing coming. And then I like dug a bit deeper and he told me Mauri. And I was like, what? That's huge. That's insane. Like, what a good signing.
And he's essentially never been on tour.
Arguably the best MPO player in Estonia.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Probably the best.
Oh, he's the best. I mean, Albert beat him at the national championship last year. He had a super bad blister the last two rounds that got so bad he could only throw forehands. This is Mauri. But obviously no shade thrown Albert's way, but Mauri Vilmaan is unbelievable. He has the mental game of unlike any European that I've seen. His ability to stay cool and not succumb to the pressure really impressed me. The first time I ever saw him play was round one of the 2023 Estonian Open. This was on the Prodigy Pro Tour, the Europe Tour back before, when there was two tours. It was Paul McBeth and Mauri and two Finnish guys. And, I mean, this was Paul's first time in Estonia in 5-6 years. And in every way, Mauri should have been intimidated. And he went out and beat the entire feature card by 7 or 8 strokes. He went on to win by, I think, 9 or 10. I mean, he blew everybody out of the water. It was one of the most consistent. I have never been so shocked and impressed by a disc golfer I had never heard of. It was unbelievable. And then on hole 15, we get to the first non-backhand hole of the day. It's like this 450-foot pure hyzer sidearm. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, there's no way that he also has a forehand. And he steps up pure hyzer and bases it. And I was just like, you're kidding me. This guy's got it all. And
does he have plans to play in the U.S. this year?
Yep.
Do you know? He does.
And that's
nice.
That's a big part of, essentially, I will unselfishly admit that I was a huge part of this addition to our team. I essentially made Andrew aware of this player, and I just knew that he was on a deal with his previous sponsor that was solid but was never going to essentially support him in the way that he would need to come to the U.S. for a long time. And so I knew that MVP had the potential to essentially change his career around and essentially make it a legitimate option for somebody like him to potentially tour full-time, because I believe he's a top 30 player in the world. He just, like, didn't have the means to be out full-time touring. And I started talking to him last spring about this idea, and he was open to it. And I told Andrew that we need to really take this seriously. And I'm just so stoked how it ended up happening. And 2-year deal. I'm just I'm beyond proud of what we're able to do for this player. I think that it's going to be really cool to see what he can do.
For sure. We now sponsor, I believe, 3 Estonian players. We have Mauri, Silver Kony, and then, oh gosh, what's his name? Jaakko?
Mm-hmm.
Aesop, I think. Mm-hmm. So we're making moves in Estonia. Making waves in Estonia.
Now all we need is Albert and Kristen.
That's right.
That's all we need.
That's all we need.
Andrew, get on it today.
All right. Now, since that was the big news, let's do rapid fire on the rest of the news.
Rapid fire on the rest of the news. The rest of the news is mainly two tournaments. We had the Shelly Sharp Memorial, which was taken down by the Raptor himself. Back to back.
I didn't know he won.
Back to back.
By a lot.
Back to back, 1090 plus rated rounds. A 13 down followed up by a 14 down. Ricky Wysocki averaged over 1070. Now, I was looking at some of those ratings. Boy, I don't know if they're inflated or not, or how. I mean, it's. I don't like to say the word inflated.
It's Arizona ratings. It's dumb.
Yes, exactly. It is. Ratings are not inflated. Ratings are relative to the field that plays that event, and so there's no such thing as inflating because there's not a baseline rating. It's just relative to the tournament. But they seemed higher than I would have expected. But nonetheless, just absolute shredding. No, no plastic problems for Wysocki. And then a less attended A-tier, but still super, super well-known, the 47th Annual Wintertime Open was won by Cam Rico. I believe it's Steve's nephew. I played with him at OTB Open, one of the nicest, humblest, soft-spoken dudes ever, but super talented, got a huge arm, and obviously, if you could pick family to be born into to play disc golf, I think the Ricos are a pretty safe bet that you're going to come out as a very talented thrower of the disc if you're born a Rico. So shout out to Cam Rico. And then
I wonder how many of our listeners know who Steve Rico is.
You need to know who Steve Rico is if you don't.
I mean, I agree. Total legend, but I mean, who knows? I would be surprised if it's over half. I don't know, maybe you have a different take.
That's your homework for the day, fans. No, I think you're right, honestly. I think Steve Rico is one of those names that not a lot of the post-COVID or COVID golfers know about. But is he the founder? He's the founder of Legacy Discs and the owner. And just a Southern California disc golf legend. And then
gamer, absolute gamer.
Not to go unnoticed because it didn't happen this weekend, but the weekend previous, Aaron Gossage takes down the New Zealand National Championships in dominant fashion, as Calvin alluded to earlier. So shout out to Aaron Gossage. This isn't really news, but it is. We can elaborate a bit. Have you guys actually looked at the particle glow? Because my hot take is that Particle Glow is the coolest new plastic technology introduction
there is
since Halo. Since Halo Plastic came out, Particle Glow is the coolest new thing because, oh my goodness, when you turn off the light and light those things up, it is one of the coolest things I've ever seen on a disc, to be quite honest.
I've not experienced that yet.
You should do it. It is so cool. It looks like the night sky. I don't even know how to... It's like a planetarium.
I need to get out my MVP blacklight and shine it in the dark.
Me too.
Do it live for us, Eagle.
I'm going to do it with Emmett later. Live. Record it and post it.
They can't see it.
It is super, super cool. I will. I got a couple of the tempos in. And those were great. And then I also, Simon, I got some balances. The V2s, I got 5. And the reactor is officially gone. There's no reactor left. And just so impressed with the flight. I can see exactly what you were going for. It's very fun to throw.
Post it to Instagram.
Yes.
Thank you. Very good.
I've gotten like 6 messages now from listeners sending me pictures of purchased toe socks.
Oh my god.
Oh, Eagle, you never replied to my photo.
I thought I reacted to it.
Yeah,
you did.
What's
okay,
you didn't
get the reaction. So what's the verdict?
I don't know if it was a coincidence, but I felt like my whole body started hurting after like an hour of wearing them. Is that a thing that can happen with those or no?
I wouldn't say so. Okay. I've never heard that before.
Okay, well, maybe it was a coincidence and I had other reasons for my body to hurt because I'm old. But I'll give them another shot. I have 6 pairs. Holy cow, they're not cheap. I am mind blown by the price of those, but I guess you pay what you you get what you pay for. And I found, surprisingly,
I went
all in. I was convinced. Your unsolicited advice convinced me, and then Joey getting them convinced me. So when I'm in, I'm in. And
Jeff,
I found
Jeff Brick sent me a picture of his foot.
Oh, wow. Guys, we should be sponsored by that company now.
In Gingy?
In Gingy, yeah. I was surprised at putting them on was easier than taking them off, in my opinion. Because when you take them off, you have to like go one toe at a time. It was like really annoying. And you got like...
Just invert
them. You pull the pinky toe and the big toe, and then it should come right off.
Wait,
that's the trick.
You guys do it that way? Know. I just start from the top, and they just go inside out. That's the
I don't like doing that.
That's the part I want clean.
Yeah, but then you have to re-inside out them.
After they're washed and dried, sure.
That's too much work.
No. That's way too much work.
You got to set yourself up for success later.
Yeah. I don't know. When I took them off, my whole body kind of hurt, and in my brain that was connected to the socks I was wearing, it might have not been. But yeah, I'll bring them on tour and I'll play around in them. And if I shoot well, they're going to stick around.
What does Natalia think about them? That's what I'm curious about.
I was so proud standing in front of her, told her to look at my feet. I was like expecting like that she would like be like super excited and give me a hug and like jump up and down.
Sounds like Eagle sold you on that fact that they create conversation.
Yeah, I thought I was about to be like a hot topic or something, but she just kind of like said like, ew, what's that? And I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Ew, what's that?
So instead of good conversation starter, it creates awkward interactions, Eagle?
Yeah, that's
success is not guaranteed.
But Emmett, my 3-year-old son, was very into them, and he actually had a little meltdown that he also wanted toe socks, and he couldn't believe that he didn't get any.
He's got a point.
Oh my gosh.
That was a fair point.
Okay, I have kind of a segment. This is in response to Simon last week saying that it's very rare, borderline impossible, to be at the top of a sport if you started later in life. So I have some examples of people who started later in life who rose to the top of their sport. I don't know some of these because, of course, I pulled it up on ChatGPT. Joey might know this. Simon might know this. Have you heard of Didier Drogba?
Yes.
Yeah, soccer player.
Didier.
Yeah. Drogba didn't sign his first professional contract until he was 21, which is considered late in soccer. By 26, he was at Chelsea, where he became one of the best strikers of his generation.
Oh, he's super huge. He was.
Yeah, but he probably started playing soccer when he was a child.
Yeah, for
sure.
He
just didn't sign a pro contract till later in life. So I will dismiss that one as that does not count.
He's from the Ivory Coast, so I guarantee you.
Yeah,
he
everyone
was playing
plays soccer there.
Soccer the whole time growing up.
Okay, well, here's a question. What do you mean? Like, what's your cutoff for being like a kid? Like, what's
16?
Considered-
we said.
16.
Yeah. Pre-puberty, so maybe like 13, 14 in an ideal world, but
okay, I'm going to still say these because they're interesting. Kurt Warner. He is a NFL quarterback. Warner went undrafted, worked at a grocery store, and played in the Arena Football League before making it to the NFL at 26. He then led the Rams to a Super Bowl and earned multiple MVP awards.
That's big, but I would say football is a very, very physical sport. Where
not
it does
for being a quarterback. It's the least physical, and it takes a lot of control.
It's still physical. Yeah, I would say kicking.
You're right.
Kicking is the least physical if you're talking about overall body use.
No, you're right. I would say that one is impressive. But I've never heard that name, so he's not like
Kurt Warner is a big deal.
You need to have heard of Kurt Warner. Is huge. Kurt Warner.
Almost
is,
everybody.
He's huge?
Everybody's listening has heard of Kurt Warner.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then, okay. I'm happy to be wrong. Next, is there another one?
There are more. There's an MMA guy, Randy Couture, but we talked a little bit about fighting is a little bit different. But
yeah.
Couture started his MMA career at 34 when many fighters are winding down. He became a multi-time UFC champion and considered one of the greatest in the sport. This is a pretty big one. Dennis Rodman. Rodman didn't start playing basketball seriously until college and entered NBA at 25, which is crazy. He became one of the best rebounders and defenders in league history.
Yeah, but that,
isn't he like
that's
8 feet tall?
Yes, yeah, so that still defeats Simon. Simon's whole point is that like you can't start something late in life and accumulate the fine
but
motor skills. Dennis Rodman is a good rebounder.
I agree to
he's
some
huge.
Extent, but my argument to that is so many of the other players in the league are playing at a high level for a long time to then come back to this or come to the sport at a later age and then become one of the best. It's pretty impressive.
But wasn't Dennis Rodman mainly famous for his personality?
He was also a defensive player of the year, though. He was very, very talented and very essential to the Michael Jordan championships.
Yeah.
But yes.
This one's cool, just
because of... I mean, this is crazy. He probably played baseball when he was a kid, but this is pretty crazy. I didn't know about this guy. Nolan Ryan. Ryan had a long, successful career, but His peak dominance didn't come until his 30s. He played until 46 and holds the record for most career strikeouts. Joey probably knows who that is.
You don't know who that is? Are you kidding me?
I've heard the name. Like I'm not that big of
Nolan,
a baseball guy.
Yeah, but Nolan Ryan is arguably the greatest pitcher ever. You could make the argument that he's the greatest pitcher ever, and I'm pretty sure. I think, despite all of his records. He has and considered to be the greatest pitcher ever. I'm pretty sure. Yep, he doesn't have a Cy Young award, which for your non-baseball fans, Cy Young is the MVP award for pitching in baseball. And that's like the reason why he is debated as maybe not the greatest because he has none of them. He never won a Cy Young. And some people say that he got snubbed in some years or some not, but it would be like you take away the 6 world titles from Macbeth and then try to say he's the best modern player ever.
Wow.
Fair.
Okay, so Simon's cutoff is 16, but this person was 15, and this is a crazy story. Hakeem the Dream Olajuwon, NBA. Started basketball at 15 in Nigeria, which is super late compared to most NBA legends who often start as kids. Went on to become a 2-time NBA champion and 2-time finals MVP and 12-time All-Star. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, there definitely is generational talents. Speaking of darts, once again, there is one of the best darts players ever said that every 7 years there is a new GOAT, a new best in the world, a new best ever seen, a new generational talent, and yeah, I guess it's possible that even if they start at 15, if you're a generational talent, It's possible. But, I mean, that's one in a million. But one in a billion, maybe.
Basketball is still the most polarizing of those, right? Because, like, once again, if Hakeem Olajuwon was 6'1", he wouldn't have been anything. And he was 7 foot. And so because he was 7 foot, he was able to try something like basketball later on and be successful because the thing that he's tried, he just was genetically predisposed to be like in the 1% of people. Like basketball literally has like a vertical barrier to entry if you want to be good.
Okay, I have another good example, and it's disc golf. I'll say this one first. Kristen Tatar.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good
Kristen
one.
Kristen Tatar. She. I will give you that. I don't know when she started.
2018, 2017, maybe 2016. It was right after her. I mean, you guys know her backstory, right? Which was that she was on track to be a high level, full time professional Nordic cross country skier, right? And she overtrained essentially so much that she developed a heart condition that would affect her VO2 max, which is essentially like your output at some VO2 max.
Energy.
It's how much energy output. And she developed this condition that essentially allowed her or prevented her from ever training like at that level. And so she pivoted she was over 20 years old at this point. I am pretty sure she was maybe my age, if not older, when she started playing for the first time. We have to have her on and ask, because that would be, she is the best one you've given so far, the best example that you've given. The other one that I was going to say, maybe Eagle, was Ezra Aderholt.
I just looked it up.
Ezra Aderholt is another great example of like a
Ezra.
Post.
Kristen started playing in 2014 at age 22.
Okay.
She found disc golf and became a professional a year later.
Katrina is another person that could be considered. And what about Ken Climo? When did he start? I feel like it was a little bit later in life. I don't think he was a kid. It was probably maybe my gut tells me past 16.
I think he was 18, maybe 19.
Really?
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, but yes, but disc golf.
Does disc golf not count?
It's such a niche sport.
All I'm trying to do is give people hope, Simon. You two are crushing their dreams right now.
No, I'm.
Okay, but not least, Rocky Balboa.
Okay.
The story of a late-blooming underdog boxer resonated so hard because it's based on real-life fighters who didn't peak until later in their careers. Everybody.
Back to fighting.
I believe in you. If you're listening to this and you want to become a professional, you can be the very best like no one ever was if you believe hard enough. That's my TED Talk.
Unless you're playing a bunch of people who started when they were kids.
Look, I think the comment section
never give up.
I think the comment section needs to give us some better examples of these late bloomers who have kicked butt. But no, I mean,
there's a whole bunch of other on the list, but I'm just not saying them because I don't think you guys would. I don't know who they are.
I think it is possible. It's just significantly harder to do. I don't want to crush someone's dream, and if you're 21 and you're just starting and you want to play on the pro tour, that's totally doable. I'm just saying that the chances of you being the GOAT or like a top five best players of all time kind of name is so small,
because that is what separates that's the separating difference. That is the difference between the 21 year olds. That's the difference on tour. Like the top 10 guys, that is their leg up, is that they've been doing it since they could walk. Like, that is the difference. So I agree with Simon that if you start something new, you can be really good at it. But the odds that you're going to be better than anybody else in the world at that thing is so low because there are so many people who started at such a young age and have been doing it. But I don't think that that doesn't mean you can't get into the top 5% of people who are doing it in the world. Because at the end of the day, discipline outpaces natural talent like 2 to 1. And so the amount of gap that you can make up on naturally talented people by just putting in the hard work is
hard work beat
really,
talent if talent doesn't work hard.
Right. But at the top of the pyramid, the problem is you have super talented people who are also working hard. Like, that's what the top of the pyramid looks like. It looks like the people like Gannon Burr who have been playing since they could walk, but they're also, do you know that Gannon Burr started running this offseason? He runs 2 miles every day now. So it's like, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to be, like, do I want to lie to our listeners and tell them that they have a chance against Gannon Burr? Because they don't. They don't have a chance.
I think you have a chance.
I
believe
chance.
In I believe in our listeners.
Once?
In the words of the owner of Ole Disc Golf Center, Vincent Schaffler, also owner of Vincent's RV, anything is possible.
OTB Europe.
Well, I mean, the greatest thing about people telling you you can't do something is proving them wrong. So we're giving you that. Prove us wrong or prove me wrong. And if you're out on the course on the
right.
tour and you beat me in a tournament, please shove it in my face. I deserve it.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Let's do our draft and then call it a day.
Raymond Van Barneveld. Is that name?
Yeah.
Sound familiar? He's a darts player.
That's darts. Start playing darts seriously at 17.
Well, he is definitely one of the GOATs.
Hey, what about me? If I ever get insane at darts, did I start late enough to be considered for? I started at 23.
The slightly different thing in darts is that it is one movement you have to perfect.
Yep.
It is one throw, and basically everything else is going to be the same. It's indoors. The conditions don't change. Always the same board. Always the same arrows. So I think in darts, for example, it is one of those sports that if you are a generational talent and you have the worth ethic above anyone else, I think it is possible to become one of the greats. But I mean,
but you can't beat Luke Littler. You're not going to beat him. He's going to beat you until he starts getting lazy.
Sometimes.
Until Luke Littler loses his drive, he is the best. But I think that that's what makes darts so fun for me, is that disc golf is the opposite. Disc golf is a sport where you have to perfect a ton of different movements in extremely variable conditions. Like, you are almost never going to throw the same shot twice in a round. And so it can be really difficult to work on your mental aiming improvements in disc golf when the conditions change so much. And that's where darts for me is like my mental aiming practice, because I have nothing to blame my misses on. There's no like, oh, that was a headwind, or oh, like, it forces me mentally to actually work on my aiming with nothing else involved. And sometimes, like, that is what I need in order, and it totally has helped my putting.
Let's do the draft.
Let's do the draft.
All right, you guys.
Deep breathe.
This was an idea that I had a few weeks ago. Basically, I think it's good for us to do some season-long predictions in the next episode or two. And this is one of our ways to do this, just so we have some fun little things to keep track of throughout the season. And in the immediate aftermath of the season, we have some little recap episodes. So this is the first of those. We're going to do fantasy disc golf. The rules are simple. Three of us, three MPO, three FPO, snake draft. You two can figure out the order. So whoever goes first and sixth. If you go third, you go third and fourth. And we just go back and forth until everybody has six competitors. And at the end of the season, the most Pro Tour combined points wins bragging rights. So I'll let you guys choose who wants to pick first.
Do we do MPO first and then FPO?
No,
or you pick whenever you want?
Pick whenever you want.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes it interesting then.
Doesn't it?
That makes
who
it
gets to pick Gannon?
Well, but I see, like, Gannon would be, in my eyes, like your, I don't know, because like I kind of, I don't want to go first. Does anybody have a preferred drafting position? I feel like it should be random.
Yeah, let's do it random. Eagle, put up random.org.
Random.org.
And give us a number between 1 and 3. I'm 1, Eagle's 2, Joey's
3. I
want to
be 1.
I'll be 3.
No, oldest is 1. We're going by age here.
Oh, I see.
All right, are you ready?
I'm 1. Random number between 1 and 3.
I'm 2.
That person goes first.
I'm 2? Okay.
Yeah.
It's 2. I go first.
And Eagle goes first, and then who goes second? And random number between, well...
All right.
Okay, I'm 1, Joey's 2 now.
It was 1, so it's, Joey goes last.
Yes!
Okay.
That's what I wanted.
Okay.
Back-to-back picks.
Going second is the worst. I'm just going to say that.
We'll see.
Okay.
Well, I have both of the points standings pulled up right here, so... I'll be writing them in. So Eagle, you
I got to pick Gannon.
Alrighty, Gannon for Eagle.
I'll take Ricky.
Simon goes Ricky. Cool. Joey. I am gonna take I get to go back to back.
Yep.
I'm taking Missy and Kristen.
I'll take Holland.
I'll take Owen.
Okay. So let me update.
You get another one, Eagle.
I get another one. I'll take myself.
Good choice.
And now it's Simon again?
I'll get one here.
And you've taken Holland and Ricky so far?
Yeah. I'll go for Calvin Heimberg.
Friend of the show.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and now I get 2. I am going to take Isaac Robinson and Nicolas Antila.
Wow. I will take... This is tough. You really want someone who plays a lot of tournaments, ideally. I'll go for Evelina.
World champ.
My turn?
Imagine playing the world championships in your backyard. That's what she gets to do.
I got to take... Yeah. I'm taking Paul McBeth. And
wow,
Anthony Barella.
Good picks.
That's your 3 MPO, Eagle?
I have 2 FPO now.
Okay. I'll take myself.
Good choice.
Thank you.
All right, and now my last 2 players.
You got to pick yourself, Joey.
I am going to take Ella Hansen and Ezra Robinson.
Good picks. I'm going to round up my team with our superstar, Silva Saarinen.
Oh, dude. Ooh. I did not look at that. Dang it. That
was. I spaced
was,
that pick.
I totally spaced that. Good one. Good steal. Okay, Eagle, you have and two left,
I get,
huh?
I get two.
This was more fun than I expected.
Did anyone take Cat Murch?
Nope.
Nope.
I'll take Cat Murch and Paige Pierce.
Oh,
good
that
choices.
That could be really, really beneficial for you if she has a great season.
I think I have some really good picks, honestly.
All right, should we go over
Minus
the teams?
Yourself.
Should we go over the teams?
Let's do it.
I'll read them
Let's
quickly.
Hear it.
All right. Team Joey for FPO, we have Missy Gannon, Kristen Tatar, Ella Hansen, the Robinson brothers,
Solid.
And Nicolas Antila. That's our team. For team
Solid team.
Team Eagle, we have Gannon, Owen, Eagle, Paul, Anthony Barella, Kat, and PP. Paige Pierce.
Wait, do I have four MPO?
Yeah, that sounded
you have
like
more
too much.
People. You have too many.
I felt like he went overboard with the
oh,
MPO.
Oh, you needed to pick only one FPO at the end because you started with one, so you don't finish with two. So you can
okay,
either
get
choose
rid of Cat Murch.
No Cat Murch. Wow. Okay, so the revised Team Eagle, we have Paige Pierce, Owen Scoggins, and then Paul, Anthony, Gannon, and Eagle. That's Team Eagle.
Okay.
Paul, Anthony, Gannon, Eagle?
Well, there's four.
That's four MPO.
Oh.
Get rid of AB.
Okay, and replace with Cat Murch.
You take Paul over AB? Wow.
I think Paul is making a comeback this year.
Okay.
And Paul actually
Wait,
beat
you're
AB.
You're getting rid of AB?
AB in standings. I'm getting rid of AB.
Well, I want AB.
So this just got ruined.
I'm taking AB.
Oh,
no, I'm
no.
taking I'm taking AB instead of Ezra. I'm changing.
Okay, you
that's
can have.
Fine.
You can,
I'm okay with it.
You can have AB.
All right, so Gannon, Own Eagle, Paul, Cat, Paige Pierce, and then for Simon, who did it right, we have Ricky, Calvin, Simon, Holland, Evelina, and Silva.
We have now entered Crush Pepper
you guys
XL
are
territory.
Screwed. You guys are screwed.
Do we actually enter XL territory?
Yeah, we're in Crush Pepper XL now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's already 11:15. What the heck?
All right, you guys. What an episode. Hope you enjoyed. We have one guy in the sun and two in the cold, and then we're going to flip that next week, two in the sun and one in the cold, and then it's going to be everybody.
The boys will be back in
Magical.
Town.
We need a name for the podcast, and then we can sign off, folks. What do you got? I have one.
You better be young.
I have the Outdoor Boys.
I think there's a conflict of interest on Outdoor Boys.
I had Afro Calvin.
I think Crush Pepper on Pizza.
Crush Pepper on Pizza?
That's my vote.
I'm fine with that.
All right, Crushed Pepper on Pizza.
Sweet.
If you go back to the OG episode, you could be Crushed Pepper on Good Pizza. Because Simon doesn't like bad pizza.
I didn't get to wine today. Hopefully next week.
Next week.
We'll be back with plenty of wine next week.
Thanks for listening, All everybody. Right. And
thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Is Papa really good at disc golf?
Yeah, tell me.
Are you really good at disc golf too?
Yeah.
How far can you throw?
A frisbee.
And what's your favorite color of frisbee?
Because I go out there and go down there to play disc golf down there. And I play disc golf up here and golf down there so far, far away because we'll say, and
but what's your favorite color?
Green and actually why I say the end. Okay, bye-bye.